Chapter 29. Into Bandar Eben.
Moraine Damodret, who died because of my weakness.
Rand slowed Tydaishar to a walk as he passed through the massive gateway to Bandar Eben, his entourage following, ranks of Aiel leading him. The gates were said to be carved with the city's seal, but swung open as they were, Rand couldn't see them.
The nameless dark friend I beheaded in those Mirandian hills. I've forgotten the looks of the others with her, but I will never forget her face.
The list ran through his head. Almost a daily ritual now, the name of every woman who had died by his hand or because of his actions. The street inside the city was a packed earth, lined with ruts that crisscrossed at the intersections. The dirt was lighter here than he was used to.
Colaver Saigon, who died because I made her a pauper.
He rode past ranks of Domani, women in diaphanous gowns, men with thin mustaches and colorful coats. The roadways here had wooden boardwalks at the sides, and the people crowded them watching. Rand could hear banners and flags flapping in the wind. There seemed to be a lot of them in the city. The list always began with Moraine. That name hurt the most of all, for he could have saved her. He should have. He hated himself for allowing her to sacrifice herself for him. A child stepped off the boardwalk and started to run out into the street, but his father caught him by the hand and hauled him back into the press of people. Some coughed and muttered, but most were silent. The sounds of Rand's troops marching on the packed earth seemed a thunder by comparison.
Was Lanfear alive again? If Ashamael could be returned, what about her? In that case, Moraine's death had been for naught, and his cowardice was even more galling. Never again. The list would remain, but he would never again be too weak to do what must be done.
There were no cheers from the people on those boardwalks. Well, he had not come to liberate. He had come to do what must be done. Perhaps he would find Graindahl here. Asmodian said she had been in the country, but that had been so long ago. If he found her, perhaps that would assuage his conscience at invading. Did he have one of those anymore? He could not decide.
Leah, of the Kosaida Charin, whom I killed, telling myself it was for her own good.
Oddly, Luz Theron started to chant with him, reading off the names, a strange echoing chant inside his head. Ahead, a large group of Aiel stood waiting for him in a city square set with copper fountains in the shape of horses, leaping from a frothy wave. A man on horseback waited before the fountain, an honor guard around him. He was a solid square-faced man with furrowed skin and gray hair. His forehead was shaved and powdered, after the fashion of Kyrianan soldiers. Dobraine was trustworthy, as much as any Kyrian was, at least.
Sendara of the Iron Mountain Tardad, Lamel of the Smokewater Miagoma, Andhelin of the Red Salt Goshin.
Ilyena Theron Morel,
Luz Theron said, slipping the name in between two others. Rand let it stand. At least the madman didn't scream again.
Lord Dragon,
Dobraine said smoothly, bowing to Rand as he approached.
I deliver to you the city of Bandar Eben. Order has been restored as you commanded.
I asked you to restore order to the entire country, Dobraine, Rand said softly. Not just one city.
The nobleman wilted slightly.
You have one of the merchant council for me? Rand asked.
Yes, Dobraine said. Milliset Chadmar, last to flee the city's chaos.
His eyes were eager. He had always been stalwart, but was that a ruse? Rand had trouble trusting anyone lately. The ones who seemed most trustworthy were the ones you needed to watch the most. And Dobraine was Kyrianan. Dared Rand trust anyone from Kyrian? With their games?
Moraine was Kyrianan. I trusted her. Mostly.
Perhaps Dobraine hoped that Rand would choose him as king in Arad Domann. He had been steward of Kyrian, but he, like most others,
knew that Rand intended Elaine for the Sun Throne. Well, Rand might give this kingdom to Dobraine at that. He was better than most. Rand nodded for him to lead the way, and he did so, turning with the group of Aiel to march down a large side street. Rand continued, list still running through his mind. The buildings here were tall and square, with the shape of boxes stacked atop one another. Many of them had balconies packed with people, like the boardwalks beneath. Each name on Rand's list pained him, but that pain was a strange, distant thing now. His feelings were different since the day he had killed Semirog. She had taught him how to bury his guilt and his hurt. She had thought to chain him, but instead had given him strength. He added her name and Elsa's name to the list. They didn't have any right to be there. Semirog was less a woman and more a monster. Elsa had betrayed him, serving the shadow all along. But he added the names. They had as much claim on him for killing them as any. More, even. He had been unwilling to kill Lanfear to save Moraine, but he had used balefire to burn Semirog out of existence rather than allow himself to be captured again. He fingered the object he carried in a pouch on his saddle. It was a smooth figurine. He had not told Cadswain that his servants had recovered it from her room. Now that Cadswain was exiled from his presence, he never would. He knew that she tagged along still with his entourage, pushing the limits of his command to never let him see her face. But she did as ordered, and so he let it be. He would not speak to her, and she would not speak to him. Cadswain had been a tool, and that tool had proven ineffective. He did not regret casting it aside. "Gentilyn, maiden of the cold peak, Miagoma," he thought, Luce Theron muttering alongside him. The list was so long. It would grow before he died. Death no longer worried him. Finally, he understood Luce Theron's cries to let it end. Rand deserved to die. Was there a death so strong that a man would never have to be reborn? He reached the end of the list, finally. Once he'd repeated it to keep himself from forgetting the names. That was not possible now. He could not forget them if he wished. He repeated them as a reminder of what he was. But Luce Theron had one more name to add. "Elmyndra Farshaw," he whispered. Rand pulled Tydaishar up short, stopping his column of Aiel, Saldaean cavalry, and camp attendants in the middle of the street. Dobraine turned back questioningly on his white stallion. "I did not kill her," Rand thought. "Luce Theron, she lives on. We didn't kill her. That was Semirog who was to blame in any case." Silence. He could still feel his fingers on her flesh, squeezing, impotent yet incredibly strong. Even if Semirog had been behind the actions, Rand was the one who had been too weak to send Min away and protect her. He hadn't sent her away. Not because he was too weak, but because something in him had stopped caring. Not about her. He loved her fiercely and always would. But he knew that death, pain, and destruction came in his wake, and he dragged them behind him like a cloak. Min might die here, but if he sent her away, she would be in just as much danger. His enemies likely suspected that he loved her. There was no safety. If she died, he would add her to the list and suffer for it. He started moving again before question could be called to his actions. Tydaishar's hooves, thumped on the earthen streets, made soft by the humidity. Rains came often here. Bandar Eben was the prime port city of the northwest. If it wasn't a great city like those in the south, it was still impressive. Row upon row of square houses built of wood, ridged at the second and third stories. They looked like children's blocks, stacked on top of one another, so perfectly square with the stories divided. They filled the city, rolling down a gentle incline to the massive port. The city was widest at the port, making it seem like the head of a man opening his mouth wide as if to drink in the ocean itself. The docks were nearly empty. The only ships moored were a cluster of seafolk vessels,
three-masted rakers, and some fishing trawlers. The massive size of the port only made it look more desolate for the lack of ships. That was the first sign that all was not well in Bandar Eben. Other than the virtually unoccupied harbor, the most distinctive aspect of the city was the banners. They flew above or hung from every building, no matter how humble. Many of those banners proclaimed the trade practiced in a given building, much as a simple wooden sign would in Camelin. The banners were far more extravagant than most, bright-colored and fluttering in the wind above the buildings. Matching tapestry-like banners hung from the sides of most buildings, announcing in bright lettering the owner, master craftsman, and merchant of each shop. Even homes bore banners with the names of the families who lived therein. Copper-skinned and dark-haired, the Domani favored bright clothing. Domani women were infamous for their dresses, which were filmy enough to be scandalous. It was said that very young Domani girls practiced the art of manipulating men, preparing for the day when they would be of age. The sight of them all standing along the roads watching was nearly spectacle enough to draw Rand out of his brooding. Perhaps a year ago he would have gawked, but now he barely gave them a glance. In fact, it came to him that Domani people were far less striking when gathered together like this. A flower in a field of weeds was always a sight, but if you passed cultivated flower beds every day, none of them drew your notice. Distracted though he was, he did pick out the signs of starvation. There was no mistaking that haunted cast to the children, that lean look to the faces of the adults. This city had been in chaos just weeks ago, though Dobrain and the Aiel had restored the law. Some of the buildings bore poorly mended windows or broken boards, and some of the banners had obviously been ripped recently and shoddily mended. Law had been restored, but the lack of it was still a fresh memory. Rand's group reached a central crossroads, proclaimed by large flapping banners to be Arundi Square, and Dobrain turned the procession to the east. Many of the Aiel with the Kyrianen wore the red headband marking them as Siswayamon, Spears of the Dragon. Rourke had some 20,000 Aiel camped around the city and in the nearby towns. By now, most Domani would know that these Aiel followed the Dragon Reborn. Rand was glad to find that the Seafolk Rakers had arrived, finally, with grain from the south. Hopefully, that would do as much to restore order as Dobrain and the Aiel had. The procession turned into the wealthy section of the city. He knew where they'd find it long before the homes started looking more lavish. As far from the docks as possible, while still remaining a comfortable distance from the city walls. Rand could have found the rich even without looking at a map. The city's landscape all but demanded their location. A horse clopped up beside Rand. At first he assumed it would be Min, but no, she was riding behind with the wise ones. Did she look at him differently now, or was he just imagining it? Did she remember his fingers at her throat every time she saw his face? It was Maurice who had moved up beside him, riding a placid dun mare. The Aes Sedai was infuriated by Rand's exile of Cadswain. Unsurprising. Aes Sedai liked to maintain a very calm and controlled front, but Maurice and the others had pandered to Cadswain much like a village innkeeper simpering over a visiting king. The Terrabanner woman had chosen to wear her shawl today, proclaiming her affiliation to the Green Aja. She wore it perhaps in an effort to reinforce her authority. Inwardly, Rand sighed. He had been expecting a confrontation, but he had hoped that the business of the move would delay it until tempers subsided. He respected Cadswain, after a fashion, but he had never trusted her. There had to be consequences for failure, and he felt a great relief from having dealt with her. There would be no more of her strings wrapping themselves around him. Or at least fewer of them. "This exile. It is foolish, Randolthor," Maurice said dismissively. Was she intentionally trying to rile him? Perhaps to make him easier to bully? After months of dealing with Cadswain herself, this woman's pale imitation was almost amusing. "You should beg for her forgiveness," Maurice continued.
She has condescended to continue with us, though your inane restriction has forced her to wear a cloak with the hood up, despite the warmth of the day. You should be ashamed.
Cadswain again. He shouldn't have left her room to wiggle around his command.
Well? Maurice asked.
Rant turned his head and looked Maurice in the eyes. He had discovered something shocking during the last few hours. By bottling up the seething fury within him, by becoming Quain Duyar, he had gained an understanding that had long eluded him. People did not respond to anger. They did not respond to demands. Silence and questions, these were far more effective. Indeed, Maurice, a fully trained Aes Sedai, wilted before that stare. He put no emotion into it. His rage, his anger, his passion, it was all still there, buried within. But he had surrounded it with ice, cold and immobilizing. It was the ice of the place Semirog had taught him to go, the place that was like the void, but far more dangerous. Perhaps Maurice could sense frozen rage within him, or perhaps she could sense the other thing, the fact that he'd used that power. Distantly, Luce Theron began to cry. The madman did that whenever Rand thought of what he had done to escape Semirog's collar.
What you did? It was a foolish move, Maurice continued. You should...
Do you think me a fool, then? Rand asked softly.
Respond to demands with silence, respond to challenges with questions. It was amazing how it worked. Maurice cut off, then shivered visibly. She glanced down to the pouch on his saddle where he carried the small statue of a man holding aloft a sphere. Rand fingered it, holding his reins loosely. He did not flaunt the statuette, he simply carried it. But Maurice and most of the others knew the nearly unlimited power he could tap if he wished. It was a weapon greater than any other ever known. With it, he might be able to annihilate the world itself. And it sat innocently on his saddle. That had an effect on people.
No, I don't, she admitted. Not always.
Do you think that failures should be unpunished? Rand asked, voice still soft. Why had he lost his temper? These little annoyances were not worth his passion, his fury.
If one bothered him too much, all he needed to do was snuff it out like a candle.
A dangerous thought. Had that been his? Had it been Luce Theron's? Or had the thought come from elsewhere?
Surely you have been too harsh, Maurice said.
Too harsh, he asked. Do you realize her mistake, Maurice? Have you considered what could have happened? What should have happened?
I...
The end of all things, Maurice, he whispered. The Dark One with control of the Dragon Reborn. The two of us, fighting on the same side.
She fell silent, then said,
Yes, but mistakes, you yourself have made them. They might have ended in similar disaster.
I pay for my mistakes, he said, turning away. I pay for them each day. Each hour, each breath. Enough. He did not yell the word. He spoke firmly but quietly. He made her feel the full force of his displeasure, his gaze seizing her own. She suddenly slumped in her saddle, looking up at him with wide eyes. There was a loud cracking noise from the side, followed by a sudden crash. Screams broke the air. Rand turned with alarm. A balcony filled with onlookers had broken free of its supports and fallen to the street, smashing like a barrel hit by a boulder. People groaned in pain, others called out for help. But the sounds had come from both sides of the street. Rand frowned and turned. A second balcony, directly across from the first, had fallen as well. Maurice paled, then turned her horse hastily, heading to help the wounded. Other Aes Sedai were already hurrying to heal those who had fallen. Rand need Tidaishar forward. That had not been caused by the power, but by his Tavirin nature changing probability.
Wherever he visited, remarkable and random events occurred. Large numbers of births, deaths, weddings, and accidents. He had learned to ignore them. He had rarely seen an occurrence quite so violent, however. Could he be sure it wasn't due to some interaction with the new force? That unseen yet tempting well of power Rand had tapped, used, and enjoyed? Luce Theron thought what happened should have been impossible. The original reason mankind had bored into the Dark One's prison had been power. A new source of energy for channeling, like the One Power, but different. Unknown and strange, and potentially vast. That source of power had turned out to be the Dark One himself. Luce Theron whimpered. Rand carried the access key with him for a reason. It linked him to one of the greatest Saw Angreal ever created. With that power and the aid of Nynaeve, Rand had cleansed Cyadine. The access key had allowed him to tap an unimaginable river, a tempest as vast as the ocean. It had been the greatest thing he had ever experienced. Until the moment when he had used the unnamed power. That other force called to him, sang to him, tempted him. So much power. So much divine wonder. But it terrified him. He didn't dare touch it, not again. And so he carried the key. He was not certain which of the two sources of energy was more dangerous, but as long as both called to him, he was able to resist both. Like two people, both yelling for his attention, they drowned one another out. For the moment. Besides, he would not be collared again. The access key wouldn't have helped him against Semirog. No amount of the One Power would aid a man if he were caught unaware. But perhaps it would in the future. Once, he hadn't dared carry it for fear of what it offered. He no longer had room to indulge such weakness. The destination was easy to pick out. About 500 Kyrianan armsmen were camped on the grounds of a spacious, stately mansion. Aiel also had tents on the ground, but they had also claimed nearby buildings and several nearby roofs. For the Aiel, camping in a place was essentially the same thing as guarding it, as an Aiel resting was about twice as alert as a regular soldier on patrol. Rand had left the larger bulk of his force outside the city. He would leave it to Dobrain and his stewards to find quarters for Rand's men within the walls. Rand halted Tidaishar, then surveyed his new home.
"We have no home," Luce Theron whispered. "We destroyed it, burned it away, melted to slag like sand in a fire."
The mansion was certainly a step up from the mostly log manor. Its large grounds were bordered by iron gates. The flower beds were empty, flowers were hesitant to bloom this spring, but the lawn was greener than most he had seen. Oh, it was mostly yellow and brown, but there were patches of green. The groundskeepers were trying very hard, their efforts also manifest in the rows of Arith yews, cut in the shapes of fanciful animals at the sides of the lawn. The mansion itself was nearly a palace. There was one of those in the city, of course, belonging to the king, but it was said to be inferior to the homes of the Council of Merchants. The banner flapping tall atop the manor was of brilliant gold and black, and it proclaimed this to be the seat of House Chadmar. Perhaps this Milisaire had seen the departure of the others as an opportunity. If so, the only real opportunity she'd gained was a chance to be taken by Rand. The gates to the mansion grounds were open, and the Aiel and his entourage were already hurrying in, joining clusters of society or clan members. It was irksome that they rarely waited on Rand's commands or orders, but Aiel were Aiel. Any suggestion that they should wait was simply met with laughter, as if he had made a grand joke. It would be easier to tame the wind itself than to get them to behave like wetlanders. That made him think of Avienda. Where had she gone so suddenly? He could feel her through the bond, but it was faint. She was very far away. To the east. What business was there for her in the waste? He shook his head.
All women were difficult to understand, and an Aiel woman was tenfold more incomprehensible. He had hoped that he would be able to spend some time with her, but she'd pointedly avoided him. Well, perhaps it was Min's presence that kept her away. Perhaps he would be able to keep himself from hurting her before death came. Better that Avienda fled. His enemies didn't know of her yet. He urged Tadaishar through the gates, riding up the drive to the manor house itself. He dismounted, plucking the statuette from its strap and sliding it into the oversized pocket of his coat, which had been quickly tailored to hold it. He handed his mount off to a groom, one of the manor house's own servants, wearing a coat of green with a bright white shirt beneath, the collar and cuffs ruffled. The manor's servants had already been apprised that Rand would be using the place as his own, now that its former occupant had been given his protection. Dobrain joined him as he strode up the steps to the building. It was washed a crisp white, with wooden pillars lining the front landing. He stepped inside the front doors. After living in several palaces, he was still impressed. And disgusted. The opulence he found beyond the manor's front doors would never have indicated that the people of the city starved. A line of very nervous servants stood in a row along the back of the entryway. He could sense their fear. It was not every day that one's dwelling was annexed by the dragon reborn himself. Rand pulled off his riding glove by tucking his hand between his arm and his side, then slipped the glove in his belt.
"Where is she?" he asked, turning to the pair of maidens, Berolna and Rialan, who were keeping an eye on the servants.
"Second floor," one of the maidens said, sipping tea while her hand shakes so much it threatens to break the porcelain.
"We keep telling her she's not a prisoner," the other maiden said. "She just can't leave."
Both of them found that amusing. Rand glanced to the side as Rourke joined them in the entryway. The tall, fire-haired clan chief inspected the room with its twinkling chandelier and ornamented vases. Rand knew what he was thinking.
"You may take the fifth," he said, "but only from the rich who live in this district."
That wasn't how it was done. The Aiel should have been allowed the fifth from everyone. But Rourke did not argue. What the Aiel had done in taking Bandar Ebon hadn't really been a true conquest, though they had fought gangs and thugs. Perhaps he shouldn't have given them anything. But considering the mansions like this one, there was wealth to spare for the Aiel here. Among the wealthy, at least. The maidens nodded as if they had expected it, then loped off, probably to begin selecting their share. Dobrain watched them with consternation. Kyrian had suffered the Aiel Fifth on several occasions.
"I never can understand why you let them plunder like highwaymen who find the caravan guards asleep," Kyrian said, sweeping into the room with a smile. She raised an eyebrow at the impressive furnishings. "And such a pretty place as this? Like letting soldiers trample spring buds, isn't it?"
Had she been sent to deal with him now that he'd shaken Maurice? She met Rand's gaze in her pleasant way, but he held it until she broke and turned away. He could remember a time when that had never worked with Aes Sedai. He turned to Dobrain.
"You have done well here," he said to the Lord, "even if you haven't brought order as widely as I wish. Gather your armsmen. Narishma has been instructed to provide a gateway for you to Tyr."
"Tyr, my lord?" Dobrain asked, surprised.
"Yes," Rand said. "Tell Darlin to stop pestering me with messengers. He is to keep gathering his forces. I'll bring him to Ara-Daman when I decide the time is right."
That would be after he met with the Daughter of the Nine Moons, which meeting would determine much. Dobrain looked faintly crestfallen. Or was that just Rand's interpretation? Dobrain's expression rarely changed. Was he imagining his hopes of this kingdom withering away? Was he plotting against Rand?
"Yes, my lord. I assume I'm to leave immediately?"
"Dobrain has never given us reason to doubt him. He even gathered support for Elaine to take the Sun Throne."
Rand had been away from him too long to trust him. but best to get him out for now. He'd had too much time to get a foothold here, and Rand didn't trust any Kyrianan to avoid games with politics.
"Yes, you leave within the hour," Rand said, turning to walk up the graceful white stairs.
Dobrin saluted, stoic as always, and left out the front doorway. He obeyed immediately, no word of complaint. He was a good man. Rand knew he was.
"Light, what is happening to me?" Rand thought. "I need to trust some people, don't I?"
"Trust," Luz Theron whispered. "Yes, perhaps we can trust him. He cannot channel. Light, the one we can't trust at all is ourselves."
Rand clenched his jaw. He would reward Dobrin with the kingdom if Al-Salam couldn't be found. Iteralda didn't want it. The stairs rose straight and broad to a landing, then split and twisted up to the second floor, touching the landing there on two separate sides.
"I need an audience chamber," Rand said to the servants below, "and a throne. Quickly."
Less than 10 minutes later, Rand sat in a plushy decorated sitting room on the second floor, waiting for the merchant Milisair Chadmar to be brought to him. His ornately carved white wood chair wasn't quite a throne, but it would do. Perhaps Milisair had used it for audiences herself. The room did seem laid out like a throne room, with a shallowly raised dais for him to sit on. Both dais and floor below were covered in a textured green and red rug of fanciful design, which matched the seafolk porcelain on pedestals at the corner. Four broad windows behind him, each large enough to walk through, ushered overcast sunlight into the room, and it fell on his back as he sat in the chair and leaned forward, one arm resting across his knees. The figurine sat on the floor just before him. Shortly, Milisair Chadmar walked through the doorway past the Aiel guards. She wore one of those famous Dumani dresses. It covered her body from neck to toe, but was barely opaque and clung to every curve, of which she had more than her fair share. The dress was of deep green, and she wore pearls at her neck. Her dark hair and tight curls hung down past her shoulders, several locks framing her face. He hadn't expected her to be so young, barely into her 30s. It would be a shame to execute her.
"Just one day," he thought to himself, "and already I think of executing a woman for not agreeing to follow me. There was a time when I could barely stand to execute deserving criminals."
But he would do what must be done. Milisair's deep curtsy seemed to imply that she accepted his authority. Or perhaps it was simply a means of allowing him a better view of what the dress accentuated. A very Dumani thing to do. Unfortunately for her, he already had more problems with women than he knew how to handle.
"My lord dragon," Milisair said, rising from her curtsy. "How may I serve you?"
"When was the last communication you had from King Al-Salam?" Rand asked.
He pointedly didn't give her leave to sit in one of the room's chairs.
"The king?" she asked, surprised. "It has been weeks now."
"I will need to speak to the messenger who brought the latest message," Rand said.
"I am not certain he can be found."
The woman sounded flustered.
"I do not keep track of the coming and going of every messenger in the city, my lord."
Rand leaned forward.
"Do you lie to me?" he asked softly.
Her mouth opened, perhaps in shock at his bluntness. The Dumani were no Kyrianan, who had a seemingly inborn political craftiness, but they were a subtle people, particularly the women. Rand was neither subtle nor crafty. He was a sheepherder turned conqueror, and his heart was that of a Two Rivers man, even if his blood was Aiel. Whatever politicking she was used to playing, it wouldn't work on him. He had no patience for games.
Milisair said, staring at him. "My lord dragon."
What was she hiding?
"What did you do with him?" Rand asked, making a guess.
"The messenger,"
He knew nothing of the king's location, Melisar said quickly, the words seeming to spill from her. My questioners were quite thorough.
He is dead?
I... No, my lord dragon.
Then you will have him brought to me.
She paled further and glanced to one side, perhaps reflexively seeking escape.
My lord dragon, she said hesitantly, bringing her eyes back to him. Now that you are here, perhaps the king will remain hidden. Perhaps there is no need to seek him out further.
She thinks he's dead too, Rand thought. It has made her take risks. There is need to find Al-Salam, Rand said, or at least discover what happened to him. We need to know his fate so that you can choose a new king. That is how it happens, correct?
I'm certain you can be crowned quickly, my lord dragon, she said smoothly.
I will not be king here, Rand said. Bring me the messenger, Melisar, and perhaps you will live to see a new king crowned. You are dismissed.
She hesitated, then curtsied again and withdrew. Rand caught a glimpse of Min standing outside with the Aiel, watching the merchant depart. He caught her eyes, and she looked troubled. Had she seen any viewings about Melisar? He almost called to her, but she vanished, walking away with a quick step. To the side, Olivia watched her go with curiosity. The former Damani had stayed aloof recently, as if biding her time, waiting until she could fulfill her destiny in helping Rand die. He found himself standing, that look in Min's eyes. Was she angry with him? Was she remembering his hand at her neck, his knee pressing her against the floor? He sat back down. Min could wait. All right, he said, addressing the Aiel. Bring me my scribes and stewards, along with Rourke, Bale, and whatever city-worthies haven't fled the city or been killed in riots. We need to go over the grain distribution plans. The Aiel sent runners, and Rand settled back into his chair. He would see the people fed, restore order, and gather the council of merchants. He would even see that a new king was chosen. But he would also find out where Al-Salam had gone. For there, his instincts said, was the best place to find Graindal. It was his best lead. If he did find her, he would see that she died by balefire just like Semirog. He would do what must be done.